thank you very much for coming, honorable members. Without really taking much of your time, we, among us, we have the DM. We also have our apologies. I'll having welcomed all of you and ensure that you feel welcomed, in particular officials that are going to be presenting here and those that are supporting those that are presenting. And when the question time comes, I expect everyone who's here not to intend to decorate, but to answer. Because you all have roles to support even the presenter. So the honorable members have a duty to ask you questions on behalf of the people of South Africa. Because we are here not for ourselves. We are here for the people of South Africa. In particular, those that were marginalized for 350 years by apartheid. It's something that we must not wish it away. You know, sometimes people don't even want to talk about it. We must just pretend there was no apartheid. We are just all equal. Those that are in church are just in church because they have their own problems. No, it was a planned thing, legally and otherwise. Isn't it, Honorable Adams? Freddy Adams? Is it not like that? Was it not planned?
Yeah.
That you find people walking to work when others are driving to work? Huh? Planned. So we have a duty in terms of the Constitution to reverse the imbalances of the past, DM. It's our duty. Transformation is our duty. Whatever you present, we must see that you are reversing the imbalances of the past. The people of South Africa must really see that you are people's representatives, in particular the voiceless, the defenseless. I hope we are together. Now, we will then go. Those were my welcoming remarks, just to remind you why you're here, in case you think just God put you here, and you must just worship him. You worship him by defending those that cannot defend themselves. That's how you worship. Actions. Ukholo olungenamsebenzi lufile. Now, we go to apologies. I'll request the secretary of the committee to read the apologies for us.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got three apologies that are registered with our office. Honorable Feek is running late because his flight was cancelled, so he's catching another one. The DG, Advocate Sam Vukela, is not able to attend this meeting because he also couldn't get a flight coming down to Cape Town. The Honorable Minister is also not able to join us this morning because he's attending the memorial service of the late Honorable Loliu. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. If the another apology from the floor. I think we all accept the apologies presented. I can confirm that I spoke to the DG this morning. He indeed wanted to be here, honorable members, and account to your questions. But he assured me that the team that is here is going to answer. There's no question they will dodge. So there's a commitment. So when you ask questions, please, without fear or favor, ask questions. We then move to the minutes, because sometimes when we check the minutes, we tend to serve them for a longer period. So it will take us fewer minutes. They are not really long minutes. Honorable members, this is your area of the minutes. We're looking at the first page. Is Honorable Radar here? Honorable Radar is here. Okay. Thank you very much. I was looking for you that side. So I was not aware that you are this close to me now.
Keep your friends close to you.
That's good. That's good. We're moving to page 2. Page 3. Honorable Masiela.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable GM. Under deliberation, the first paragraph, the last sentence, the committee further recorded its disappointment that targets stated in the 5-year strategic plan were not going to be achieved. Not if.
Thank you very much. I will do this. Any further corrections? We move to page 4.
I second the mover with the amendment in the minutes.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nagava. With the amendment adopted. So, thank you very much. We are then done with the minutes. We just correct the is if they were, and then I will sign them off hopefully today. We will then move to the first presentation in terms of the agenda. Is one presentation, but it is done in two so that at least is not confusing. So the operation bring back is clear, and then the other presentation is also clear. I think that is how it should be done. Maybe before we then do this, we'll expect the official to introduce themselves, but we'll also do the same, starting from the chair. My name is Humphrey Menezi. I'm the chair of the committee. Mr. Kildane.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Menezi Sofiltane. I'm a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Dennis Ryder, also a member of this committee. Good morning. My name is Dennis Ryder, also a member of this committee. And I also had to walk to work for the first couple of years that I was working. Thank you.
Mr. Dana, come back. You must be recorded. Put your mic on.
Thank you. My name is Mwese Sufiltane. I'm a standing member of this portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patricia Ellis.
Thank you.
Morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Manuku Masahela, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Morning. Thank you, ladies and thank you, men. My name is Tsediwe Madlopa. I'm the member of this committee with Honorable Sultan.
Thank you. Thank you. Are you done?
Yes, sir.
Okay, were you recorded? Did you put your mic on? Yeah, Gala Foot. Thank you very much.
Sanbonani. Ikama uketa mabala tole. Oyilwa le COVID. Ngiyabonga.
Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Larry Adams.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm Salil Umali in the Office of the Minister and the Media Liaison Office.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Thando. My surname is Wababa from the Ministry. Thanks.
Thando Wababa.
Yes,
okay.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. I'm George Mudumela, the Chief of Staff, Office of the Minister.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mpoma Shaba. I am the Parliamentary Officer in the Office of the Minister.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Swansi Matthews. I'm the DDG responsible for the Immovable Asset Register.
Okay.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Nashtiv Sankar. I am from DPW Head Office working with Ms. Swansi.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Nyeledzi Makubele. I'm the Divisional Head for Real Estate Management Services, Department of Public Works.
Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Peter Chiapesco. I'm the Chief Director, Portfolio Analysis at Public Works. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mapule Malavana. I'm coordinating the OBB project.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm the DDG for governance in this department. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning, colleagues. I'm Jerry Cronin, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much. Now we know each other very well. We'll then hand over to the department to do the presentation the way they would have preferred to delegate each other. I'm handing over to the department. Okay, Honorable Adams?
Yeah, there's two gentlemen in the corner. I don't know who they are. So.
They are in the corner?
Yeah.
Okay, so can we request the gentlemen in the corner to introduce themselves?
Good morning, Chair. I'm Redingo from Communication Public.
There is a place too. Two spaces.
Where is the second gentleman?
Good morning. My name is Manda. I represent the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you very much. In fact, Honorable Adams, that assisted me to remember that we also have staff members that are helping us as a portfolio that I would want them to be known. There's one next to me. Can you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chief. Good morning, everyone, again. The name is Nolasco Botwana, the Committee Secretary for the Portfolio Committee on Public Works.
She has a nice voice. Let's hear this other staff members further down.
Good morning. I'm the Secretary for the Portfolio Committee on Public Works.
Read again. Your mic was far away.
Good morning. I'm the Secretary for the Portfolio
Committee. Thank you very much, Inez. President Ed Jensen. He's in the corner. Mr. Jensen is in the corner. And he's moving around, he's giving himself the role of a rogue ambassador. Okay, so he's missing the opportunity to do himself, but he's always doing it everywhere. I see him moving around. Can we then turn over?
Sorry, you are not so audible.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's why you are the whip of this committee. Yeah? Thank you very much. So I was saying that Denison is not around. Né? Maybe just step outside a little bit. But he's usually moving around. So official is one of the staff members. He's a content advisor for the portfolio committee. Can we now hand over to the department? The DM has already indicated that Mr. Fazel will be starting, breaking the ice.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the committee once again. Chairperson, in terms of our presentation, there will be two separate parts, as you mentioned earlier. we will address the characterization of the asset register. I understand that the committee wanted the department to present different categories within the asset register. We'll comment with that, and we'll start shortly for a short amount of time on the foreign services bill, and then we'll move over onto the Operation Bring Back program. Chairperson, my colleague, Ms. Swansea Matthews, who's responsible for the branch that takes care of the maintenance of the asset register, will present the first two parts. I'm told that the system's not working this morning, so we'll present directly from the hard copy of the presentation and ask members to kindly follow us with the hard copy. So let me ask Swansea, can you take it from there?
I will do so, DDG. Just a point of clarification, Chair. Our colleague, Mr. Peter Chapasco, will actually deal with the foreign assets aspect.
Okay.
And
good.
I will then cover the types of assets within the portfolio.
Good. That answers it. Subject.
Yes. You may go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Chair, honourable members, we're grateful for the opportunity to address the committee on the stock of assets that comprise the DPW property portfolio. Perhaps during the course of the presentation, we'll say a little on some of the challenges and aspirations that we have for this treasure chest of accommodation solutions and service delivery initiatives. Just to start on the first slide, we manage an extensive portfolio comprising 29,322 registered and unregistered land parcels, on which 93,943 improvements are located, which consists...
It is written immovable assets and overview of the foreign assets. Is a document like this, honorable members, a written immovable presentation to portfolio committee, immovable assets and overview of foreign assets. I hope we are together now.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And back to you, my sister.
Thank you, Chair. As I was saying,
You have a problem of water not opening up. Thank you. You can start again. I think we are now together.
No, Chair, I was saying that we're very grateful for the opportunity to address Chair and Honourable Members on the stock of assets that comprise the DPW property portfolio. Perhaps time allowing, we'll also say a little about our challenges and aspirations for what we regard as a treasure chest of accommodation solutions and service delivery initiatives. As I was saying, the portfolio is extensive. It comprises 29,322 registered and unregistered land parcels, on which 93,943 improvements, as in buildings and structures, are located across 52 client departments in order to make a contribution towards the state service delivery objective. We also release suitable vacant land parcels to the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and also the Department of Human Settlements and this relates to agrarian reform measures and also for human settlement. Hence, you can see, Chair, in that way that the portfolio is of strategic significance. We also then have the IAR serve as a primary source of data for property-related activities or transactions. We've also initiated the migration of a rebuilt IAR data into an integrated management solution, which we call Archivus. And this is really to try and address issues around the utilization of, or previous utilization of, manual and also outdated systems. So we're going to have this consolidated, integrated IT system that we're increasingly utilizing for the running of the immovable asset register. We are also able to determine our property portfolio, confirm existence, in other words, what we own, conduct high-level condition assessments of the property, and also who are the users of the properties as verified and validated through the physical verification project. We've also, Chair, as you can see in the last paragraph there, we've applied what we call a deemed cost model or methodology in order to eliminate assets recorded at R1 and determine appropriate carrying amounts or the an appropriate value for immovable assets under the custodianship of DPW. As a result, the total value of immovable assets as disclosed at 31st March 2017 was 139 billion, and that figure grows, it continues to grow. We've also, in that regard, Chair and honourable members, made a significant contribution to the National Treasury, South African Reserve Bank, G20 balance sheet project. Essentially, this project measures the value of the state's assets across the country, but obviously our focus was on DPW. So it measures the value of the state's assets as measured against the current sovereign debt, which has been growing. And hopefully will help show foreign investors that South Africa is a safe, stable haven for foreign direct investment. So, you know, that's another way in which we hope that the work that we're doing will contribute at a strategic level. Moving to the next page, Chair and members. The next page shows the DPW portfolio breakdown in terms of the freehold. Are we all there? We've called it the state of the government estate. And the first pie chart we have there shows the various accommodation types split into percentages. And you'll see there, Chair, we've got 54% under specialized assets, 39% under residential assets, and insofar as the residential assets are concerned, we are of the view that there may be surplus assets that we will use from that stock of residential assets for sell-off, disposal, and you know, revenue generation initiatives. So we're of the view that you know, our revenue generation initiatives are likely to come from the stock of the residential assets, which is quite substantial. Then we've also got then 7%, which is focused on offices. In terms of building occupancy, 96% of the portfolio is currently utilized. 4% sits unutilized. In terms of land parcels, vacant land parcels sit at 33%, and occupied land parcels sit at 67%. And again, we've just then again, just to summarize, set out the 29,000 odd land parcels, 93,000 buildings, sitting at a value currently of 139 billion. The specialized assets, just for clarification, largely comprise police stations, prisons, courts, and defense facilities. So what we've done is to take what are essentially our key clients
and give an indication of, you know, where we reside in relation to assets that are utilized by the key client chair. Then moving to the next page, the thought chair and members would have a keen interest to see what is the split of our assets per province, and it's set out, as you can see there, Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, Northern Cape, Western Cape, and then the relevant category types, as in your correctional services, defense, home affairs, justice and constitutional development, office space, SAPS, and other, which we've highlighted that this includes 9,653 vacant land parcels, which we utilize, which we will utilize to meet the state service delivery and socioeconomic objectives. Then we've got a column there showing the total number of land parcels, and then again the total value of the land parcels as well at the end there. So it's quite, it's a complex, substantial portfolio. Then on the next page, chair members, we've got a summary of the buildings per province. So we just looked at the land parcel, now we're looking at actually the buildings per province. And again, you can see we've done the split there between the provinces and then our key clients. We've also highlighted that the 25,012 buildings comprise other user departments, for example, water and sanitation, human settlements, and so on. And we are again emphasizing that we use the portfolio to support PMT's investment decisions in line with government service delivery objectives. And again, we've just then shown the value of that entire portfolio at about 139 billion. The next page, Chair, Honourable Members, relates to building condition analysis that we've performed. And if everyone is there, as you can, you'll see from that we manage essentially the life cycle of immovable assets within the DPW portfolio. This comprises your capital maintenance, your construction, and this is a key activity in our view. I think in later weeks, other colleagues will present to discuss proposed financial models and other measures for revenue generation for maintenance of this portfolio. So if we look there at the key departments, we've then done a little chart or showed columns showing the condition of the property. As you can see, that ranges from very poor, poor, fair, good, excellent, and then we give a total. Then the little chart underneath that then shows the average portfolio condition from very poor, poor, fair, good, excellent. So that's where we're sitting. I think almost at maybe 67% of the portfolio sits at a fair condition. We've also highlighted that we manage the life cycle of removable assets in accordance with our legislation, GIAMA, and we conduct physical verification and condition assessments over a five-year cycle, this would include the use of various technologies. We increasingly use technology to assist us in review and assessment of our portfolio. We also like to think that we are contributing towards skills transfer and job creation for our young people. Currently, we're using 132 young graduates and project managers for recruitment of the enhancement, the IR enhancement program. Chair will then pause then. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Peter Chiapesco will deal with the overview of the public services in a few minutes.
Chair.
Thank you very much, MTS. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, good morning once again. My task is to present an overview of the current situation as it relates to the management of the state's foreign immovable assets. This is a question that frequently comes up in portfolio committees and other structures, and it's important that the portfolio committee be informed as to what the current situation is. The presentation is in three parts. The first part on page 8 is basically to present the overview of the management of state-owned properties abroad, and then I'll get into specific details relating to that. So the department had been the historical custodian of state-owned foreign assets until 1999. And at that point, up to that point, it had been tasked with the life cycle management of what was then 101 immovable assets throughout the world, basically in service to international foreign affairs, as it was then known, otherwise today known as international relations and cooperation, as well as other government departments that serve in the missions. Besides the 101 state immovable assets, there was quite an extensive number of leased properties, be it either the chancery, the official residences, and specifically the apartments or the homes that are rented for the staff that live overseas. State-owned foreign assets in foreign countries typically comprised of chantries and official residences which had been acquired or built by the state over many years. The colleagues would know South Africa House, the official residence in Washington were amongst some of the original properties that were bought and built. Others were bought. Lately we have built the compound in Abuja. I think they call it the diplomatic compound. However, in point number 3, following protracted discussions in the 1990s between the department, DIRCO, National Treasury, and the Department of Public Service and Administration, the function to manage and procure properties and accommodation abroad was allocated directly to DIRCO by the then Minister of Public Service and Administration with effect from the 1st of May of that year on the recommendation of the Public Service Commission in terms of Section 33A of the Public Service Act. That implied the process that you followed to formally transfer a function from one department to the other. A key motivating factor was the perception that DIRCO had an advantageous position to better manage the foreign property portfolio than DPW, given its closer proximity to the assets, as well as direct knowledge of local conditions, legislation, and property practices and processes overseas. The scope of the function transferred to DIRCO included all aspects regarding leasing, purchasing, disposal, alterations, maintenance, refurbishment, furniture, and facilities. So effectively, everything went from us to that department. Allocation of the function to DIRCO, as I've just mentioned, implied the full financial and operational accountability, as well as final decision-making authority on the function. The intention of DIRCO, as noted by the Minister of Public Service and Administration at the time, was not to duplicate professional, technical, and essential services, such as architects and valuers, but to continue to source these services from DPW as far as possible. This happened in the early years, Honourable Members. However, in the 19 years since the function was allocated to DIRCO, the role of DPW has diminished very significantly, and the department has acted primarily in recent years as delivery agent or project management in the development of a number of chanceries and official residences abroad. Example, of course, the one that members would know is Abuja, Nigeria. We don't have anything to do with the rental of accommodation, the housing of staff. That is all handled by the Department of International Relations. And it's on a need-to-have basis that they contact us. Further, the immovable asset register of state-owned properties abroad, as it is today, is disclosed by DIRCO in their financial statements. So we don't have a record of what the new number is. At the point we handed it over, it was 101 state-owned assets 19 years ago. We don't really know what the total register is. As far as December 2017, there was a director general meeting, and the department requested the disclosure of the asset register so it could form part of what my colleague is doing, which is comprehensively start to show have a record of the state's immovable assets. The second part is just an overview of disposals of state-owned properties abroad once they've declared surplus. So, as in relation to disposals, the State Land Disposal Act of 1961, which is Act 14 of 1961, empowers the Minister of Public Works to disclose of properties under its custodianship on the terms and conditions that the Minister may deem fit as articulated in the legislation. The Act further mandates the Minister to manage properties effectively and efficiently in the best interest of the State, and this is obviously taken into account in terms of the disposal transactions. In the realignment of South African relationships with the rest of the world subsequent to 1994, a number of missions overseas were closed and some of the properties sold before 1999, the proceeds of which were returned to the National Treasury as in practice. An example of this is the official residence in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, the official residence in Montevideo. There were others that were closed, example Paraguay. These disposals were dealt with jointly by DPW and DIRCO, with DPW being the final disposal agent in terms of the aforementioned legislation. Notwithstanding the allocation of the property function to DIRCO, that department has not yet been mandated to dispose of foreign immovable assets, as the State Land Disposal Act has never been amended to make provision for this. So, effectively, the State Land Disposal Act would need to have been amended to allow the Minister of International Relations to be the final disposing authority. Alternatively, that department could have applied for a presidential proclamation in terms of that legislation. But neither of those were done, and the situation currently is that that department comes to this department requesting assistance in the disposal. On page 11, the list of properties abroad declared surplus by DIRCO was updated over the years with a requirement for DPW to dispose of these. In 2008, the then Minister of Public Works approved the properties identified by DIRCO as surplus to be disposed of through public tender overseas. In a pilot phase, five of these properties, they were five houses in Namibia, were sold in 2010. The balance of those 13 overseas remain unsold, as the highest bidders, in fact, could not afford the payment when the time to claim the purchase transacted. As we speak today, 13 properties abroad known to us as surplus to DIRCO remain unsold. They include the Chancery and the official residence in Bonn. As members would know, Bonn moved to Berlin as the capital of Germany after its unification. These are fairly valuable properties in the region of 30 to 40 million rand each. And there is a parking garage in Paris. There is the official residence in Funchal, Madeira. So there's 13 properties which remain unsold. However, in an interdepartmental meeting in 2017, the DG2DG meeting I referred to earlier, DIRCO then indicated that the process to dispose should not proceed, as the department has identified other uses for the properties. We wait to hear from that department what those uses are. The third part of my presentation is to take the Portfolio Committee of Public Works into our confidence in relation to an overview of the interdepartmental engagement with DIRCO on the Foreign Services Bill. DIRCO has championed the enactment of legislation in relation to all aspects of the Foreign Service. They wanting to set up a completely separate regime for officials once they are in service outside the country. The management of immovable state-owned assets abroad is covered in Clause 8 assets of the Foreign Services Bill, which has a number B35 of 2015. Based on the allocation of the function in 1999 to DIRCO, the department's position has been that the Forest Services Bill must comply with the Government Immovable Asset Management Act 819 of 2007 in respect of the full spectrum of life cycle immovable asset management. The department has engaged DIRCO on regular basis in respect of the required rewording of the proposed Foreign Services Bill in relation to Clause 8 assets, and has also appeared in two sittings of the Portfolio Committee for International Relations and Cooperation, where its position was duly articulated. The first of these meetings was the delegation was led by our Deputy Minister, who is present here today. We then share with the Portfolio Committee what our inputs into the legislation are, and I won't specifically go into the details unless required to. The first is in relation to definitions. We noticed that the proposed legislation was fairly light in the use of property-related definitions. So we're very specific on what the meaning of acquire is. They speak of assets, and we distinguish, and we emphatic on immovable assets because that's what they were meaning in that clause. And then we talk to other areas, going on to page 14 in relation to Guillaume. And what is very interesting is that the bill emphatically says that the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation is the custodian of immovable assets of the Republic acquired for used by the Foreign Service, and we've instilled this specific second bullet where the Minister's custodianship must be exercised in accordance with the provisions of Guillaume. And we've assisted Dirko with the wording to say, subject to subsection 2, the Minister may acquire or dispose of assets. And what's very interesting is that they want to be very specific about this acquire and dispose. Rather than amend the State Land Disposal Act, they want to put the acquire and dispose into their Foreign Services function. So there is ongoing discussion with Dirko. Currently they trying to soften the impact, and we're resisting that because we feel it diminishes the authority of Guillaume and starts to allow for operations in a way that is not governed as we would by the government, the Guillaume legislation, which is why it was enacted in the first place. The department's position has not been to contest the function. So we've accepted that the function was handed over 19 years ago. The alternative would be to say, no, we want to claim back the function as the experts on state property. But we haven't gone there. We've accepted the fact that decisions were made in 1999, and we've worked in accordance with that. Chair, that is all on the foreign property information. I've been asked to just put in a slide in relation to, which talks directly to my colleague DDG Matthews' presentation, which is a plan for portfolio optimization. And this is to show what we're going to do as we mine the information in the asset register. Colleagues will recall that we've been through an extensive process to enhance the immovable asset register, and the time has come for us to really make the asset register, the assets in the register, work and perform for the society, for the people of this country, and through that, the benefit of the property management trading entity as it establishes and picks itself up. So the verification of the immovable asset register reveals that 9,653 vacant land parcels exist. These are broken up, and I don't have the figures here. This is part of the work we're still doing. They're broken up into ADVIN, which typically, and ADV members would know, is a smaller site in a city or in a town that is typically usable for offices or for housing, a single house or for a small development of houses. You then have agricultural holdings, which in the olden days used to be plots.
Sorry, where are you reading from now?
Page 15.
Page 15. Okay,
so
page
15. Yes. Okay. So the three categorizations of land is ADVIN, agricultural holdings, and farms. Agricultural holdings are the old plots, which used to be on the periphery of towns. But today, these plots have been taken over as cities and towns increase. And they function less as plots and more into light industries, in fact, heavy industries in some cases, as well as human settlements because of the necessity to be close to towns and cities. And then we have a very large number of farms. These are farms in the outlying areas. In other words, they're outside of cities and plots. And these are the big farmlands that we really need to understand. We don't at this point, for instance, know the nature of the farm. We're not experts in farming. We need to know, is a particular property having gold or diamonds or minerals underground? Does a particular farm lend itself to grape, wheat, or any other form of culture? To get to understand that informs the value and the potential of the property, and ultimately how it can be put to service the needs of the state and the society of the state better. That knowledge is going to take time to get, and we're going to need experts to assist us. In relation to the 1989 vacant buildings in different condition, I think that links to point two, that the above mentioned properties will be matched against the domestic needs of the state in consultation, as my colleague has said, with user departments, other custodians, as well as human settlements, rural development and land reform programs at both national, provincial and local government level to ensure optimum utilization. Those surplus assets which are not required by any sphere of government but which have potential economic potential will be deployed to optimum use in support of income generation initiatives of the PMTE. These may include commercial ventures and or disposal to realize the highest and best use potential for the state and its people. I think an important consideration to make or to note is that the department is the preeminent custodian, so we hold the balance that doesn't belong to everybody else. And that's not to say that every single asset will be able to be used, because some might be in desert situations where you can really do nothing, but somebody has to hold the balance of that land, which is South Africa. And those assets which can be used have to be put to use in such a way that allows us to safeguard and protect the other assets that cannot be used. And that will come from the mining of the information in the asset register that we have now recently completed. These initiatives will align with a current project to develop a financial model for the department and the PMTE. And this, of course, looks towards clearing the deficit, the financial overdraft, and so on, through unlocking the economic potential of each property. And there's quite a large project on the go with the finance division in the department to work on the financial model, and I'm sure that will be shared with you in time to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I would presume that we carry on with the third part, the OBB, for now, and then we take questions on the whole lot at the later stage.
Members, can we hear them? I guess we are noting everything. Can you allow that they go to Operation Dreamberg, Sudan, and Qatar? So are you indicating whether we are allowing or not?
Yes.
Let's hear Mr. Sudan first and then Qatar.
Thanks, Chair. I think this very first presentation is so thought-provoking that we need to give it special attention, and then we move on to the other sections. Otherwise, a lot of our concerns may not be adequately addressed if we mix them with the other policies. It's quite a thick document, the next one. That's the other reason why I would suggest that, you know, we give this for 3 minutes of attention, and then we move on. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Qatar.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, I share the same session as it's
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. No, I was I was of the view that our main core of the presentation for today is OBB. That's what we wanted to understand. And the issue of the asset, it was like to go through and understand that if you say bring back from what? So that is the introduction. The key work is on the OBB. But I agree with the colleagues that there are things that we need to get a clarity on this one. But I think we need not to stuck on this one, because our more insight that we want to understand is on the OBB, because it's where the corruption, illegal things and so forth that we wanted to understand when we were requesting this particular presentation. but we can just, if the colleague is saying they want to ask and go, but I was adamant, but I will agree with them if they want, but not to stuck on it and not move, because the key work that we requested as a portfolio is the OBP.
Honorable Freddie Adams.
Chairperson, yes, I hear what my colleague is saying, but I think so the second part of the presentation will get a much clearer picture, because the other part, the first part of Ms. Matthews was part of the OPB as well, and the second part of the forum state, I mean, we will still have to deal with that. But I think if we can continue on the operation bring back, it will give us a much more broader and clearer picture. Because then we will have a holistic view in terms of what the whole presentation is saying. So I would suggest that we continue with the presentation and then afterwards move into a holistic view of things and not just down a narrow view. Thank you.
Honorable member at Beck, I'm sorry you didn't even get the opportunity to introduce yourself.
It's me, Abitay. Thank you, Chair. These two items are very, very important, and I think we have a lot of questions already on this. And I noticed that in committees what ends up happening is such a large information overflow and a lot of information we don't end up getting on. So my recommendation is that we deal with this, and then we move on to the next presentation and deal with that still again. If we don't finish either, that we maybe put the department back to complete the process. But I think this is a very, very important thing. I think we need to
thoroughly
engage on both these
presentations.
Thank you, Chair.
Just to Mr. Reagan's going to speak, just to see if you cannot be persuaded that these two presentations are related. Like Dr. Madopa is saying, the first one is an introduction to the operation bring back. The operation bring back will also answer some of the questions you may have in the first one. Now, if you only ask on the first one, and then when they present the answer, you it will be sort of a duplication. Whereas if you hear the complete story, you will then ask much. I think we do have time for you to ask as much questions as possible, because that's your work. Ask as much, to probe as much. But I'm inclined to persuade you to allow the press so that you have a complete, you know, sometimes when you ask questions strongly, when the answer is already on the second presentation, it's like you are preempting. So let me hear if Honorable Redder is persuaded.
Sure, I'm not. And the fact is that the department chose to separate it into two presentations. That indicates to me that the two matters, whilst there's a little bit of overlap, there's not that much correlation. I think that the next presentation, and I want to appreciate the fact that we got the documents well ahead of time and we were able to go through it. It's a very different set of circumstances dealing with those properties. I think this one is nice and quick. I don't believe we need to flog it to death. I think a quick, short, sharp question and answer session on that, we can put it to bed and then get into what is the ugly relative. You said they're related, but this one's definitely the ugly sepsis, this one.
Thank you very much. I think we could not be persuaded. So I will then agree that we allow members to give clarity-seeking questions on the first two presentations already done, and then we'll finish up with the operation thing bring back later. I'm now going to take hands with your clarity-seeking questions, so you can start raising hands. I see Mr. Sultana and Raida. I see Keta. Stole, Mateus is ready, Honorable Maciela is ready, Honorable Patricia Adams ready, Dr. Madropa ready, in that order.
What? Thanks very much, Chair. We will be as cooperative as we possibly can. Just limiting the questions. Slide 2. You talk of high-level assessment. I'd like to know what you mean by that. And I'm asking this question because the incidents where poor maintenance of properties can lead to some drastic actions. I come from Barrow, and next to my home is an institution called Walter Sisulu, a technical college. Those students currently are on strike because the doors in the female dormitories don't close. They literally have got female students. They've got to move doors, put them at night, and then remove them in the morning. They hardly have any privacy. They are on strike. It's on national television precisely because of that. I spoke to the chairperson or president of the SRC over the weekend to find out why they are on strike. And he told me that's the reason. Hostels not taken care of. That's why last time we asked if we have got an SLA with the user department. So this high level, I would love to know what is meant by it, because of what students are on the streets because of poor maintenance of buildings. Secondly, Chair, on slide 15, there's something that makes me excited there when the department indicates that it's prepared to make available some buildings, some assets for economic development. What I would like to know there is whether you've got a policy for this disposal. And I'm asking this question again because time and again, business people, small enterprise people, come to us and they say, we do not have the space from which to conduct our businesses. Simple business like brick making in Barawa for one fellow is an ANC, very, very strong ANC. We live in the same village. But he finally came to me and said, we don't have space just for making bricks in the town of Barawa, you know. So these are the reasons why I'm asking, what is your policy? When will you begin to make these assets available for the private sector? Second last question, Chair, based on slide 9. This is the real reason why I wanted us to deal separately, you know, with this matter. The issue of DELCO taking over, what I believe are the constitutional is a constitutional mandate of this department. Mm. To me, that is a serious matter. Mm. Specific question. I hear the reasons is for convenience that they wanted to take care. But when it comes to disposing and acquiring, now that's a serious matter. Is this move constitutionally compliant? That's my specific question to the department. Does it pass the constitutional muster, you know? And lastly, as an ancillary to that question, to whom does DELCO report on the condition of the buildings? Do they report unto themselves? You know, thanks very much. I won't bother about their skills on it and what have you to maintain the buildings. But to whom do they report? Thanks.
Honorable Redan.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, starting on page 2 again, I really feel I need to get an answer to this. The first line says that we've got 29,322 registered and unregistered land parcels. That's a number that was thrown at us in the middle of last year as well, which we took on board and we accepted. It was then reported earlier this year in one of our committee meetings that that number has ballooned to 110,000, and then the Minister of Finance in his budget spoke about 190,000 properties, which the state owns. I want to know which is the correct number, what is causing the confusion or the difference, and where are the properties managed that are not on this thing? Because it's quite clear in the Minister of Finance's speech, he said specifically, we have got 190,000 properties that we can consider and look at selling off. I want to know where the rest are. What is the correct figure, and what is causing the difference in reporting? Still on page 2, there was a mention, although it's not written here, but in your presentation you mentioned that Archibus is now the point of reference, which is marvelous. I just want to confirm that Archibus is up and running, that it has been tested and that it is secure, and that we're no longer managing the property database on an Excel spreadsheet, which was the last information that we had, although it was partly denied and we weren't sure. Good. Page 3, the vacant land parcels, that is tied to the later presentation, and I think we can deal with that later. my comments there. Moving on to page 6, where we're looking at the building conditions. The fact that we've got 65,000 properties in fair condition, okay, so there are then 12,459 in very poor condition, but 65,000, by far the majority of our property is in what we call fair condition. I think fair condition might be a point for debate, and we can debate what's fair and what's not fair. But to me, this is a massive concern, because by far the majority of you know, you're looking at close to 70%, which is in need of some maintenance between those three categories, fair, poor, and very poor. 70% of the properties that we own are in need of maintenance, because otherwise the fair is going to move into the poor column next year, and then the following year they'll be in the very poor column. Okay. So, the Department of Public Works mandate, our white papers, this comes back to, you know, where are we the custodian, and where are we the owner, and where does our authority end and where does it start? Are we doing inspections and telling our user departments, guys, you need to budget 500,000 Rand for this building next year for maintenance? Put it in your budget, it must be there. And insisting that our assets, because ultimately that is, it's public works assets, okay? Public works assets are being properly maintained by the user department. Again, it's just pointing fingers again at that policy uncertainty, or the gaps that we have there. Right, then moving across to the properties abroad. Chair, I think I propose site visits to all of the properties.
I'll vote with you.
We will begin with the 500 first houses in
Namibia. That's fine.
Namibia last. Wonderful to
Europe. Cool. Which is a good place to begin, because I think that
you are colonized.
Because that was those five, and then the other eight that remain unsold, the properties. I just want to know, what state are they in? Are they fairly neglected? Because this is a reputational risk for South Africa. So again, it points to the fact, like with those vacant stands that we referred to earlier on, 33% of land parcels are vacant, okay? And they're an irritation for the people that live around them. I'm regularly called to come and have a look at vacant stands where the grass is long and the tsotsis are hiding in the grass on payday, or to grab ladies on their way home from work in the dark, or there's people living on the properties, or there's informal recycling activities happening on the properties, etc., etc. Is the same happening on these properties abroad? Because that is massive reputational risk for our country. And I think it's important, therefore, and I agree wholeheartedly with Honourable Fulkani, you know, we need to determine. Obviously, a policy decision was taken at some time that Durka is responsible for these things, but we seem to still have some sort of a legacy hang on, and it's falling in the middle. We need policy certainty. We need to decide, is it yours, is it mine? If we can just decide that, we must either let go or we must take it back, one or the other. I think, you know, to push your foot around the matter for another 5 years is not going to help anybody. I then want to go to slide 15, or page 15, the plan going forward. And I think that the fact that we've got 1,989 vacant buildings in different condition it's a big number. To stand vacant, you know that there's always risk of vandalism, degradation over time, lack of maintenance, etc. And that's a scary number, especially when we know that you go to any police station or magistrate's offices and there's overcrowding. And most of our government buildings is overcrowding because we have grown as a country. Our population is growing. I was looking at some statistics recently. Our country is growing so quickly, and we're not keeping pace with the services that we're providing. So I heard what was said about needing to get professionals on board to identify and to move forward, etc., etc. What I'd like to request is that let's break that project down into bite-sized chunks, because if you hand the responsibility across to somebody to go and give you a plan, a long-term plan, and this is how we're going to go, etc., etc., you're going to wait 4 years and sit on your hands for 4 years and not achieve anything, and we're going to have 4 more years of not doing anything while we wait for that report. If we can get a bite-sized chunk and get some quick wins started and start moving in the right direction about using these vacant land parcels, using these vacant buildings, etc., and start moving forward so that there's some immediate progress and there's some changes. To farm out part of the research and then wait for an answer and an indefinite wait is going to be dangerous. And then I also want to just reflect on point three. Surplus is not required by any sphere of government, but with economic potential. I want to strongly support Honourable Fulpani as well to say, listen, there must be a policy here to prevent these assets or these properties from ending up in the presentation that we're about to have next. Okay, there must be a strong policy. It must make sure that there are laid down guidelines strictly adhered to, and that we're not ending up with these things disappearing for the wrong reasons. I also want to make sure as well that we are very careful and circumspect about disposing of assets to deal with our overdraft facility, I think was mentioned, because you don't want to end up selling off the family silver to pay off the credit card. We need to be very careful about what we do with our assets and to think that there's still a long-term plan. South Africa is going to be around for a long time still to come. We don't know what's going to happen, and the state needs to sit on certain assets. So, you know, something might not be needed for service delivery now, but in 20 years, what are our projections for 20 years' time? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speak. Welcome. We did receive your apology. We were told you are definitely coming. The aeroplanes tried to mess you up, but you refused to give in. You are now here. You missed the presentation, but I guess it was sent to you, but you also are likely to have a hard copy now, if you can assist. And the first question in the first two presentations is done by Peldane and Honorable Rader, so the other members are going to be asking questions in your presence. We are only dealing with the first and second presentation. We are now, after that, we'll then go to the operation bring back. So I'm trying to ensure that you fit in, so you are not losing. If they move, you feel you must ask one question or more, you will be, because you tried, despite of obstacles, you are here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
We will then allow Honorable Kachar.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation, because it helped us to understand about this foreign asset. But my Chairperson, the first one is on page 2, where they are talking about the cotton as 200. What I want to find out, how many? Because we must understand how many and the status of those assets that are recorded as 100. And the other Chairperson is on slide number, no, page 5, or slide number 5, I don't know. There's 25012 building computer for other user departments, for example, water, sanitation, human settlement, and etc. What I want to find out is if they can break down the assets per department, because if they say other, it doesn't actually say how many for water and sanitation, how many for human settlement, because we must know that the data and they give to others. And the other Chairperson is on slide number 11. Slide number 11, Chairperson, on number 5. Number 4. Actually, my concern, Chairperson, is that according to them, they said the property are not sold. they are unsold as the highest bidder in the mint could not raise the necessary capacity. So what I want to understand, who's budgeting for this not sold properties, and who's maintaining them? If I understand it well, this sentence, if they can actually unpack it and explain it. And the other chapter, the last one, chapter then is on slide number 14. The last one, there is ongoing discussion with Delco and finalized for waiting as it related to immovable assets in the bill. Do they have the time frame? What is discussion ongoing until when? Because they have to give us a time frame, because it cannot be as ongoing as this one. And the last one, this one on slide number 15. Number 3, supplies assets not required by any sphere of government. If they can just take that one, because if they are talking about their planning, but they say some assets are not required by the sphere of government. The discussion about that unrequired. And what I want to find out is the relationship between DECO and the department, because it shows that there's something that is not going well between the two departments. I can propose, Chairperson, if we can have a meeting with DECO so that we can find exactly from them what are they planning about this asset. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. There may be in the question that asked from Qatar, how many are these properties that are recorded as of 1 rand? You must also say where are they, not only the number, but also where are they. We will then move to Honorable Mades.
First question, the last time the Auditor General came to present here at the committee, they said that the Department of Public Works has the asset register on an Excel spreadsheet. So, and they said they have been asking, and this has been an ongoing session with the Department of Public Works, so I would like to know if they have moved on from having the country's assets on an Excel spreadsheet to a very appropriate on the issue of the land. So we have like what, about 122 million hectares of land in South Africa. Are you saying that government or public works rather owns like what, 33% of vacant land? So in the bigger scheme of things, that 33% accounts for how much of the, I think it's 122 million or something like that, hectares. So have we done sort of calculations to that extent? And then how much of that 33% of land is actually land that can be used for farming? Where's the land located? I mean, these are very important questions as we move to expropriation of land without compensation. So I think the Department of Public Works must get ready for that. There's the overlap with the department, right? So you have Department of Public Works, then you have these essential human services departments, right? You have the Department of Health, the Department of Basic Education. We don't know who's maintaining what building anymore. Is it national? Is it the provincial Department of Public Works? Is it the Department of Health? We don't know what's going on. Our hospitals are in appalling condition. And you know, I always find with the Department of Public Works, you service us as minister, as MPs, you come to our parliamentary villages, those sprinklers come on time, they'll come, you'll clean, you'll do wonderful jobs. I'm sure it's even better for the ministers. You saw what you did there in country, right? But our people, the most vulnerable, who use our public services, have you seen those hospitals? So who's taking responsibility for this? And it can't be that we have a Department of Health whose core services to provide health services, or the Department of Basic Education to provide education, this is starting to maintain buildings as well. Because just the maintenance of buildings, acquiring buildings, is a huge task. So we need to have clarity of roles. So who's responsible, who's doing what? And I think that's going to be a starting point of being able to provide proper services. Doctors don't even want to work in those hospitals. Just spend a night in one of the hospitals and you will never ever want to go back. Even in our schools, our children are still falling down for this. So I want clarity on those issues around who's responsible for what. And what do we need to do here as a committee to be able to have those clarity of roles of who's doing what? How is it that the Department of International Relations can decide, okay, these 13, how many 13 properties we have used for them, what use? Have they told us what uses they have? So let's get clarity, come, let's talk. We here, we make rules, we make up legislation. Nothing can't be done. So that must be our entry point, what needs to be done. Do we need to do an act? Let's do it. Because we can't keep servicing our people the way that we are. The residential office space, I mean, there's a lot of buildings I just know downtown in Johannesburg, for example. Then we have this huge outcry for student accommodation. So why aren't some of those buildings just renovated and given over to student accommodation? We're spending so much money on what? Have we done sort of a comparison, how much do government departments and entities, for example, how much are they using to rent office space, etc., opposed to the buildings that we have that are lying vacant? We must do all those analysis and come up with a strategy. And we can't come up with a strategy if we don't know. So I'd also like to speak to that. And I think I spoke about the hospital, the office space. Covered with all the others. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masuela. It's your turn.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. On slide number 9, the first one where it talks about the function that has been transferred to DELCO, which includes, I think they've listed all of them there regarding the leasing, purchasing, disposal, and so on and so on. So what I want to know, I want a clarity on this one. What do we mean by this? What is really the work that was supposed to be done by them? Clarity on that one. And also, you said we don't have all the information as we're presenting. Is the DELCO not reporting regularly to the department what is happening to those properties that were given to them to take care of? Also on 11, I think it's page 11, where they're talking about DELCO saying they cannot dispose some of those properties because they've identified other users. What users are those? Are those particular properties now fully in use, or what is happening? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masuela. Can we now hand over to Honorable Patricia Adams?
Thank you, Chair. I thought Honorable Matlofa is first then myself. But thank you for the presentation and thank you for the opportunity. Chairperson, I would like to apologize to my colleagues here. I speak here and there in Afrikaans. But I want to begin with the objectives of the Department of Public Works. And one of them is coordinate, regulate, and provide oversight over the public works sector. What does that mean, public works sector? Doesn't that include the buildings overseas? And another one, enhance intergovernmental relations by coordinating current concurrent public works functions. Now, Chairperson, I want to start on slide 2. I have a number of questions, and I would like you to give me the opportunity to save them.
Yeah.
the very first sentence, the Department of Public Works manages an extensive property portfolio of that numbers registered and unregistered land parcels. Why are there still unregistered land parcels at this time when we for the last 4 years moved and zoomed into the immovable asset register? And we, the whole committee, is very passionate about that thing. Then, Chairperson, the second paragraph, DPW releases suitable vacant land parcels to the Department of Rural Development. They do this. I'd like a number, exact number, what they did. When you release a vacant land parcel to Department X, do you follow that, the use of that land? Because it's state property. And I'm asking this question because land is very much in the focus these days. Then, Chairperson, I think Honorable Sitole asked that question, this high-level condition assessment of properties. You know, one can play with words, but everything has to be measured. And what yardstick do you use to measure that? I don't know much about buildings and things, but that's questions that comes to my mind. Then, Chairperson, the last paragraph on slide 2. The assets, the immovable assets, the total value of the immovable assets was disclosed as 139 billion. Does that mean the property that was not allocated or what is the word here? Given to other departments? And the value of that property. Chairperson, is it market related? And if so, then it means each year the value must grow if the total number of property remains the same. And I would like you to show us over the past 4 years that we have been here as the Committee for Public Works, how this has grown. And I would like you, not today, I don't know, I know it's not possible. For example, if you've got, if you had 100 properties, 2014 when we came here, you disposed of 20. And now the 100 properties value was this, and it is now that. That's what I want to know. Chairperson, these recent, on slide 3, I think one of my colleagues already said that question on the this revenue generation initiative. Oh, one must be very careful about that. Is there beforehand, wat er vooraf bepaalt ons het zoveel geld nodig voor dit goed verkoop wordt? Is there a method that we as Department of Public Works say we need so much, so much revenue before we resell? Then, Chairperson, a very interesting thing on slide 4 and 5. The heading of slide 4 reads summary of land parcels per province. And the next one says summary of building per province. Now, land parcels, I always zoom in at the Northern Cape one. And then I look at the rest of the country. Because I'm from the Northern Cape.
Okay.
Now, Che, land parcels per province. I'm interested in this home affairs thing. You see, the land parcels for home affairs, there are only 52. In the Western Cape, there's one land parcel. In Northern Cape, there's two. There are two land parcels.
Mm.
Now, you go to the buildings. Then, buildings per province. Western Cape, 2 buildings. Northern Cape, 53. Please explain, I'm just a dom om dit te verstaan. Please explain this to me.
Mm.
Then, Chairperson, on slide 5, assets under construction. How far under construction? When will they be finished? Then, Chairperson, what does components mean? Slide 5. What does it mean? Then, Chair, I think the Honourable Ryder spoke on slide 6 about this fair. You say you do it in a 5-year cycle. Is that enough? It's our property. You must keep your eye on the property when you evaluate when a building is fair. And when you go to, say, Department X and say, you need this and this construction, you must budget for it. Do they buy in? And what are you doing when they don't buy in? And these buildings, are they all universal accessible? I don't think so. Especially the schools, the hospitals, home affairs. Chairperson, this thing of Durko, I don't want to tread there. Fools don't rush in. Fools rush in with angels fear to tread. That's what the proverb says.
Okay.
But Chair, I think I actually hear all gemakkelijkheid. Property in overseas are state property.
Yeah.
They are state property. And you, we as Department of Public Works, I think it's our responsibility to look at that. And how often do you assess the state of the buildings? Chairperson, I'm finishing up now. I'm interested in this. Approximately 13 properties abroad remain unsold. Now, what are they used for now? And why are they unsold? I think property overseas would be prime property for anyone. And if they are unsold and you want to sell and Durko want to sell, why do you try to sell it in South Africa? Get South African buyers, that's what I mean. Chief, I think, the plan for the portfolio optimization, I concur with my colleagues there. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. State property is state property wherever you find it. So says the Honourable Member. And the mandate of the Constitution and the laws is clear. Which department? Now you guys are moving out. Honourable Members want to understand. You working outside the laws, you must answer. The next question would be coming from Honourable Dr. Madaba, and if you close it.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Thanks to the Department for the presentation. Chair, mine is first on slide number 3 on the 4% unutilized property, which is unoccupied. It can be looked small if you say 4%, but it's big if you call them by numbers.
Yeah.
Because it's, I think it's 4% of 93,943, which will come to 3,757, unoccupied, unutilized. What one is not sure, when did this particular property state unutilized? And what is the implication of it? And what is the plan of this department in that regard to make them being utilized? I don't know whether it's one of those that are not needed by either any department or NHB of government that was said by the colleague going forward. The other question is on slide number 6. You indicated the building condition analysis on the property of the government, especially the correctional services and the rest department, and then you indicated other 1,538. Maybe it would be proper to understand those other, because we would want to know who is responsible for maintaining those particular properties. And also to check, you said you have recruited young people, 132 young people, mm-hmm. to deal with this problem, you know, like an enhancement program. We are not sure when were they recruited and have they started, you know, to deal with this backlog of the conditions of the property. Because if you look at the very poor condition and poor, it's a lot. It's more than 12,000 to the nearest is 13,000, which is at worst. That need to be really to get an attention. The other question is on page of slide number 8. Slide number 8. I did not hear well when Honorable Peter. Peter. Was making a presentation on the foreign assets vis-à-vis the mandate of the department. Maybe he can clarify further or unpack it. You know, here, this resolution of 1999, it said the Department of DECO was tasked, you know, 101 immovable assets were handed over and they were tasked to deal with it. To me, there is a difference between a task and a responsibility. The responsibility to me, that is a mandate of a Department of Public Works, stayed with the Department of Public Works. The mandate and the responsibility. The DECO is performing a task on behalf of the department. Because I will move further to what my colleague Filtane was saying, to say there is a mandate, constitutional mandate. There are legislation or the act, like the YAMA, that still gives the department a mandate to handle the assets of the government. If this task, is it a gentleman's agreement, or there is a legislation that empowers them? Because it can't, you know, we say the constitution is the supreme law of the country. If it gives the mandate to the department, you can't cry foul and say, you know, like as Honorable Peter was saying, they handed, Mr. Peter was saying, we handed over 101 properties, but at the moment we don't know. We can't account to say how many remaining and so on. To me, it doesn't hold water. I'm saying this because in the same presentation, he's indicating that when the DECO is disposing the property, they request them. It means to say that they can follow, they can account on the property that is remaining internationally. It can't be that DECO is running with it and we don't know, because DECO does not dispose without the assistance of the department as mandated by the constitution and the legislation, to say that the minister is the person that can dispose the property. So really, I don't get well on that one if we are saying that the DECO, maybe you hand it over, but now you can't be sure when you are responsible for disposing. Mm-hmm. Secondly, if we are saying the mandate was handed over to the DECO on the disposal too, with all the other functions that were given, my question is, when the Department of DECO is requesting the disposal, Does the Department of Public Works use its own policy for disposing property, or they use now the one for DECO? Because seemingly it's like, they, let's just say, you know, leave me alone. is this one that has got now the responsibility of the overseas assets. Hence, the colleague is saying, assets of the government is assets of the government, irrespective of where they are. We want to get that one, but you indicated your contribution to the bid as a department, but seemingly, it's like there is no coherence working relations to say that when you amend this, because remember that the responsibility lies with the department. The department, if they delegate that particular responsibility, no, not the responsibility, the task, because if you delegate, the responsibility remains with you. So that is the understanding when we look at that one. Maybe you will assist us with this thing of the police, as the colleague was asking, because that's what I was concerned about, and the mandate given by the Constitution to the department to say they must deal with this. I see the legislation and so on. It keeps on pointing to the department. This is what you have to do as a department. You have to explain to us what is a gentleman's agreement that they must do it, what empowers them to deal with their thing.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sheikh.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'll be brief because I was late. My first question is on slide number 3, and I see that we are told that they have converted the assets valued at 1 rand to values, what do they say, they call it, I don't know, the question was asked if it's market value. Nevertheless, if I look at that, and I'm not too sure now, this 139 billion, if it's the land parcels as well as the buildings, so that can be clarified, but I've got two calculations here. So if I look at, if it's just the buildings, Honorable Chair, then it tells us that each building is valued at 1.47 million, which is ridiculous. I mean, that is a small amount. So it cannot be the question that is asked by the Honorable Adams, market-related value. So obviously, the rentals charge will also then not be market-related, which we know is not the case. So I just thought it would be interesting just to find out what is the value. And I understand there is a spreadsheet, so it might be useful if we get a spreadsheet. And we can see that on the spreadsheet, that Excel spreadsheet which they still use. On slide number 9, now note number 5 says that the scope of the function transfer to DERCO included all aspects including disposal, is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I look over the page and slide number 10, number 3 says there that notwithstanding the allocation of the property function to DERCO, That department was not mandated to dispose of state-owned assets. So that is a contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's a contradiction. And then, lastly, Honourable Chairperson, I promise, these properties that remain unsold... Okay, let me just go to the silly question that it doesn't make sense, but I'll ask it anyway. This land, the surplus land disposed through public tender, is that only in the local, where the land is situated? Or to whom is it advertised for tender? And then slide number 5 on that same slide, this property that's unsold, at what cost? Because remember, it's unsold, it's surplus, so it's costing us. We must be paying taxes and so forth. So do we have a cost of that unsold property which we are not using? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just checking if there's any honourable member that I may have not seen the hand. There will still be another opportunity if members are fine. So I'm happy I didn't leave out any honourable member. So knowing that there will be an opportunity after the other presentation. Now we'll hand over to the officials to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'm going to ask Ms. Matthews to comment on the responses, followed by Mr. Mr. Chapescu. And if there's any left, we will the rest of us work with it, but I'm sure he'll take care of it. Ms. Matthews?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, honourable members. On some of the questions, I'm going to ask my colleague, Mr. Nash Sankar, to deal with those, particularly some of the more technical issues around high-level condition assessments and what we mean by that, issues in relation to componentization and or components and what we mean by that. If I may, Chair, I would like to just hone in on the question asked by Honourable Ryder in relation to the figures and the correctness thereof. We stand by those figures. Those are figures that we included in our annual report. I do take Honourable Ryder's comment about different figures that have been used elsewhere, and perhaps that's an issue that we need to engage with the relevant department. We do hear you, but we stand by those figures. We should also just point out, which I think we've done in the past, is to say that there are fluctuations in the numbers because, as we've said, we do dispose and acquire property, so it's a moving canvas in that respect. I think also in relation to properties that we bring back, for example, under your operation bring back, that would play a role also in changes in the numbers. But the numbers we like to use are the numbers that we give at financial year end. That's what we like to really focus on, to try and then smooth over these other fluctuations that you get throughout the period of the year, which is a fact. And I always like to say, Chair, that if those numbers are not moving, then it might, in a sense, say very little about the buoyancy of our property, of our state property market then, and some of the initiatives that we want to push in terms of socioeconomic development and the like. So they're not going to stay. It's not a static canvas, this thing that we call the removable asset register. But I do take Honourable Ryder's point about some of the differences, and I can't speak to that, but we would need to address some of our colleagues who have come up with some alternatives on the numbers.
Chair, let me just continue at that point because it might not be clear. The Honourable Ryder's question was clear, and DG Matthews seems a little bit careful. And basically, in his budget speech, the former Minister of Finance, Minister Gigaba, mentioned some figures in terms of the value of property and what could be realized through the sale of property. New minister has written, well, he wrote to the former Minister of Finance, but no, it's now a letter addressed to the current Minister of Finance, just to indicate that we're not sure where those figures came from. We're well intentioned, we're sure, but no, I
think that's not
the answer. I think it's clearly, but just to say that we to clarify the question, which is, and to agree with DDG Matthews that. We stand by our figures, and there was clearly in the complexity of drawing up a budget under tight pressure, something that in our view is inadequate. So we are in communication with the at a ministerial level. I just thought it was important to hear about that.
No, I think. Yes, Matthews was clear. In fact, you said the same thing, that you stand by your figures.
But you didn't say
okay. but maybe the point must be made that the Portfolio Committee of Public Works is clear. There's government communicated figures that are contradictory, and we have recorded because there were in fact presented in public and official platforms, so we want answers. So which means to say you remain with your figures is not the answer we are taking. So we still want the answer. So you must tell us, because the minister, remember you are the deputy minister, your colleague had said this is what the government is standing at in terms of the property. So, and at one point, these figures that Mr. Ryder were given in public and official engagement. So we want clarity as a portfolio. So, to say you're standing where
This is not anchoring us. Explain, unless you are saying you are not in touch with your other colleagues. But if you are in touch, tell them your portfolio wants answers. So they must then tell you their sources. Unless you are saying the portfolio must call them. We thought you, as the deputy minister, you are able to talk to other departments.
That's
you
are exactly what I'm saying.
So we want then that answer to come. So we want that answer to come. Because we note all this because we're from government senior people. We note all of them. They are not going to. So that question then must still be answered. So standing where you are, we hear it. But you must still answer us why your colleagues have said so. So that at least we understand their source. And maybe they can also assist you as well. And then you assist us. But we also work with time frames. So we also want that this answer to be clarified quicker because they already have their sources of their information. So it shouldn't be a matter of waiting many, many
years. Chair, with respect.
Yes.
We are in communication with the Ministry of Finance around this matter. We think it was an innocent error on their part, and we are pointing out the correctness. If you want answers, and we're giving you the answer, which is that, in our view, as the Auditor General looks at our figures as well and so forth, and therefore we're standing by those figures. If you want to find out why the Minister of Finance or former Minister of Finance said what he said, then I suggest that you approach him or you approach your colleagues in the Portfolio Committee of Finance and ask them to establish the matter. But we as a department are one in contact, as I say, in communication with him in order to correct the matter, and we're telling you what we're doing. So with respect, let me make that point very clear.
Thank you.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. I think, Honorable Chair, we have to take it from the department because they are responsible for asset register. As they are indicating that maybe it was a mistake from the other department. I don't think it's a big thing when they ask them come back. If they say they made a mistake, they made a mistake. Because the people that are the custodians of the information around the government assets is the Department of Public Works. I think let us take what they are giving us to say that their information, it may fluctuate, but it's based on the annual statistics to say this is what we have now. As they say that bring back may fluctuate it, or selling may also bring it down. I know that it was a public, really, it was in public. But I think because we are getting from horse's mouth the correct information. The mistake that they made, they can just talk and then maybe come back, the deputy minister report to us to say that as is indicating that it may be an innocent mistake that was happening in that department, or just, you know, when you type the fingers, they do everything that you don't want.
Thank you. I think let's move out of it. Mr. Matthews was still on the platform, so I think we know that the department is saying they stand by their figures. We note that. I hope we are not ignoring what the other minister said. Because it's also in our interest that as government we don't really communicate contradictory, in particular by higher people. I think it's something that we are also noting. It's not a question that was asked out of rumors, it was out of formal things. So I hope we'll find a way, Deputy Minister. I think let's allow
Ms. Matthews to continue, as she was continuing, and clarify.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I think there was another question by Honourable Ryder regarding the close to 70% of the assets that are in need of maintenance. Chair, I think when I started, I did mention that we were busy with the financial model and also the development of more appropriate user charges that we want to persuade our various colleagues should apply to this portfolio to allow us to have a set of funds or funds appropriate for the maintenance of the portfolio. I think I also mentioned the issue of some of the measures that we would want to take measures for revenue generation as well. Also again in relation to having available funds for the maintenance of the portfolio. But I think, Chair DM, I don't know if one in front of politicians can call it that. There's always this tension or dichotomy between the need of the need for funds for capital maintenance of your portfolio and the budget allocation that are largely driven by national treasuries the world over. So what I'm trying to say is that there's this tension or dichotomy that exists, particularly in financially constrained times.
Yeah.
So, I think it's an issue that we will be grappling with in the sense that even if we acquire those sale proceeds or other funds, are we going to be allowed to retain them to then drive up our maintenance of our property stock, and also in that way encourage, you know, the development of the economy through the utilization of infrastructure and the like, job creation initiatives and all of that. So, but I think what we grapple with is this issue of this tension that exists between the budget allocation and also the need for capital maintenance over a very complex, substantial property portfolio. But we do take very serious note of the issue raised by Honourable Ryder. Chair, there was also a question. Chair, I don't know whether maybe I can jump around, but I think there was an interesting question from Honourable Mateus in relation to, for example, the maintenance of hospitals and schools. What is the starting point? Whose responsibility, clarity of role? And I think that really there was an earlier comment by Honourable Madlopa in relation to the supremacy of the Constitution. And really that is our starting point. And I think that therein there's a very clear distinction between your national and your provincial functions. So I think really I must first try to point out, Chair, that DPW is one among several national custodians. So we have state security as a custodian. We have water fair. There are a number of custodians that exist at the national level, performing national functions. Then we also then have your provincial custodians who then perform your provincial functions in accordance with the Constitution. So your hospitals, your schools, that will largely be driven by the provincial, as provincial function. So I'm not running away from the question, Chair, but I think it's important to just highlight that there is this division in relation to functions as per the constitutional mandate. I think there were also questions around the recording of assets at one rand and what is being done about that. And really, Chair, the point we were trying to highlight is that we developed this deemed cost methodology, which is not a market-related project. But we developed that methodology in order to eliminate this problem of the assets that are recorded, that were recorded at one rand. And we believe, insofar as DPW is concerned, we've eliminated that problem by using this deemed cost methodology and ascribing a particular methodology to value our assets. And we take it as a very good starting point, because what we did is to look at, firstly, the municipal valuation role. And where the MVRs were available, then we utilized that to value a set number of the properties. Where the municipal valuation rolls were not available or were of poor quality, we then utilized a different method, which I think was called the comparable sales method, where we looked at assets within a particular location in order to arrive at a value for our properties that were sat in that particular location. We then also had a third methodology that we call the replacement cost, where we asked ourselves, well, in the event that a particular building was destroyed, decimated, no longer available, what would be the cost of replacing that particular asset? So those were the methods that we used to come up with this value that's currently sitting at 139 billion. I think there were comments from Honorable Sick and others as to what can and cannot be, and I think to some point we would agree with that, but we are hard pressed to point out that it wasn't a market related exercise, because if you consider the sheer size and complexity of our portfolio, it would not be an easy task right now, given the constraints that we're operating under, to try and run a project on the market value of our portfolio covered. But we're comfortable with what we've done. As I've said, we've engaged with both the Reserve Bank and also National Treasury, and it's contributing to the G20 project that they're doing on the state assets and liabilities. It's also a methodology that we've shared with our counterparts in the provinces. The methodology is also included in the National Treasury Guide on Immovable Assets. So we take it as a good starting point. Thank you, Chair. I don't know if at that point, Chair, if I should then pass on to my colleague, Mr. Nash Sankar, to deal with some of the more technical aspects.
Nash? Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Maswanzi. In gathering the questions, I did realize that there were some questions that were sort of across different colleagues. So I'm going to just go through the list that I've made. Chair and honourable members, the first one was regarding the condition assessment, the high-level condition assessment. Now, in creating the immovable asset register, we went from ground up, where we recorded the land parcel, the building, the components, and infrastructure within the facility. When doing this, we did a high-level condition assessment where we looked at what was on the ground. And based on what that asset looked like from a human being perspective, we gave it a condition assessment, be it 20%, 40%, 60%, 80%, or 100%. And we had, at that point, set out a guideline as to what would be a 20% condition rating, all the way up to 100%. And based on that, that's how we came up with the condition assessment that we have currently. It's a very high-level condition assessment set out by the guidelines that we were conducting the physical verification with, and in line with GIAMA, I think at that time, that we had to do a condition assessment. And that's what the high-level condition assessment refers to. Taking from what the colleague did mention regarding the school or the doors that are not in place, at that point, when that assessment was done, we did not have a facilities management branch that went within the infrastructures to actually do the assessment inside. We have now put that in place. I think the FM branch is now being established, which will now go ahead and do this further condition assessment within the facilities to determine what maintenance requires to be done within the facility. So that is a project that's running currently. With regards to Archibus, Archibus is being implemented. Our asset register is in Archibus. It is being tested currently. It's at a pilot phase, and we are planning to go live as of the 2nd of April 2018 with our asset register in Archibus, where it will be maintained within Archibus, the system of Archibus. So I think I'm answering two people at the same time here. Yes, in terms of XL, eventually when we do the submission to the AG, we have to give them a report, an export of something. And the easiest way to export something is in Excel and then hand it over, as then data is being run against different platforms and analysis being done. But yes, the movement to Archibus is being done, is being conducted currently. And once we are happy that the pilot phase is completed, we will be moving live with the Archibus system.
Can you give us a date on that, sorry?
Yes, we signed for the 2nd of April 2018 to go live with Archibus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Madesh?
Just on that subject, please, can, so you say that you don't use an Auditor General to have wrong information, but the Auditor General says you use spreadsheets for your accounting staff, for your audit, for your asset registers, for everything. You don't use your accounting system. They didn't say you exported something from an accounting system into a spreadsheet. So I just want to be clear whether the Auditor General gave us correct information. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes,
just to answer that, yes.
Honorable Adams? Honorable Adams?
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm getting quite a big signal here. When they presented the APP, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Mokoro, then said that the APP system is up and running.
Yep.
Right through GPDA. Now we're hearing now it's starting the second of APP. Okay, they must tell us. What is Archibus up and running? Has the CFO lied to us to say that it's up and running for all sectors of the platform? Or what is happening? Please.
Clarify, Nesh, maybe Mr. Mokoro was meaning that he was still on the pilot. Maybe clarify.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair and colleagues. Yes, the AG did give you correct information. They did not lie. What we're saying now is going forward, once we go live with Archibus, our asset register will be in Archibus. It's not going to be in Excel. That was the past. Now we're moving on to the future. To answer you, sir, colleague, we have been implementing Archibus in phases. So to say that we it was reported incorrectly.
If I can just try to assist.
Yes,
yeah. No, Chair, we've been implementing Archibus in phases. And remember, you know, there's a portion that relates to us, as in the movable asset register. There's a portion that relates to leases. There's a portion that relates to other activities within the branch. So I'm not sure exactly the context when CFO was talking, but we have a phased approach, and we're doing it as per the module. So I'm not sure whether when he was saying that, he was talking about we've now migrated the business onto Archibus, and it's a phased approach. We started with the fixed assets. He's moving to this. He's moving to that. I'm not clear.
Honorable
Adams.
But we can clarify,
Chair. Chair, no, I don't want to raise the point, but the point is that we had an intense discussion that day. But I still ask him, why do they go for Archibus? Why doesn't the department develop their own system? See that there's so much IT groups in the world. Departments can then develop their own system. And my specific question, is it going to be in phases? Then they say no, they've migrated fully into Archibus, specifically on this item as well. with their properties and everything, finances, a whole lot. So, but it's quite interesting to hear that they are now starting on the 2nd of April. So what can we expect next?
Okay, you are still on the platform, but I guess your explanation is that maybe the CFO was meaning the phases that you were beginning to implement in various areas before you actually globalized the implementation. But maybe how he happened to put it, it was as if it's almost complete, whereas you were still testing in various areas. But it was across South Africa, isn't it? So somehow it was correct, somehow. Not really correct, but you were trying to answer. Also, that's how I'm understanding your attempts to really clean the statement. You were not part of the statement, but you were cleaning the statement. You were just, I think I heard you.
No, thank you for your guidance, Chair, and I think maybe I must just make a point of clarification and pause there, because we did migrate to Archibus. We migrated to Archibus and all the modules were done in phases. But the actual fact of going live, now going live where we can actually transact on the system, maybe a subtlety that, maybe we were remiss in maybe highlighting to our committee. And we will clarify that with the correct technical people, Chair.
Okay, good. Next, you are still on the platform. Thank you, Ms. Matthews. Thank you, Ms. Matthews.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, regarding the 33% vacant land parcels as reported, Honourable Member, you did ask if what these land parcels can be used for and where they are. We can do the analysis and provide that support to you where they are, and based on the function of the type of land parcel, we can tell you what they are currently. In terms of what they can be used for, analysis has to be done on the actual land to determine what they can be used for. Honourable Member, regarding the unregistered properties, a lot of the time they are, it's a process between a survey and a registration between the Chief Surveyor General and the Deeds Office. So a lot of the time we find that they are actually consolidations and subdivisions conducted on land parcels, and they may have been surveyed by the Surveyor General, but there's a delay in the Deeds Office to actually register them. Besides that, we've also embarked in assessing whether all land parcels within our portfolio have been surveyed, and we are in a project with the Chief Surveyor General to conduct a survey of all land parcels to make sure our land parcels are all surveyed and registered in the Deeds Office correctly. So there is a delay in the registration, and we are trying to deal with this through the Deeds Office in showing them these land parcels where we find it's unregistered and try to get them registered as soon as possible. regarding the components that you mentioned, Honourable Member, components are assets that are within a building. These can be lifts, exhaust systems, generators, etc. These do have a functional responsibility within the building, and we have to value them accordingly within the building, and that's what the component aspect refers to in that report. Honourable Member Dr. Matlopa, you did mention about the 4% unutilized buildings, and you'd prefer to see the numbers, and yes, we can provide that analysis to you, and I think there is a plan that's being put in place currently regarding these buildings and what we're going to use them for going forward, how we're going to utilize them going forward. So we can probably provide that plan to you. yeah. Regarding the recruitment of the 132 young graduates and when are we dealing with the condition assessments going forward, as it was done as a high level condition assessment previously. As per the Act, we have to do condition assessments on a 5-year cycle. And using, now we're utilizing the graduates within the Department of Public Works to conduct these condition assessments, the physical verification of our assets and the condition assessments. And we do it in a phased approach as well throughout the 5-year cycle to reassess these assets. And with the partnership of now the facilities management branch, we can go and do a more in-depth condition assessment as well as a componentization of the assets, thereby really getting the real more in-depth condition assessment of the assets to be used going forward.
Thank you.
Peter?
Thank you very much. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, my questions predominantly respond to the issue of the foreign properties, which indeed in the 19 years since handed over to Foreign Affairs has been the subject of much interest. Where today, in terms of Giama, the Minister may consider assigning custodianship to an organ of state or an entity of state wishing to be a custodian. The practice at the time was not that. The practice at the time was the Public Service Act, and the ministry would approach the Minister of Public Service and Administration and consult with the other affected minister, and that's exactly what happened, and I have the letter before me. The then Minister of Foreign Affairs, Minister Alfred Nzo, wrote to the Ministry for Public Service and Administration, the then Minister Dr. Skweyiya, requesting to take over the function completely, citing that his department would be better adept at managing the portfolio than Public Works was, because they were represented abroad and Public Works was in a way based in Pretoria without any officials overseas. There was much debate. I was a youngster in the department in those days, but I was involved in this issue. And leading to the elections in 1999, Minister Radebe relented and conceded the function. And the letter, this was then all agreed to by the parties, and I have the letter before me. It's from Dr. Skweyiya to the Minister Radebe, indicating, dear colleague, and I'll just read the short pertinent extract if I may. Dear colleague, placement of the function concerning the management and procurement of properties and accommodation abroad. After considering all the facts at my disposal and in the interest of the state, I have decided on recommendation by the Public Service Commission in terms of Section 33A of the Public Service Act 1994 that the function to manage and procure properties and accommodation abroad, including all aspects regarding leasing, purchasing, disposal, alterations, maintenance, refurbishment, furniture and facilities, be allocated to the Department of Foreign Affairs with effect from 1st of May 1999. The Commission and I have noted that allocating the function to Department of Foreign Affairs implies full financial operational accountability and final decision-making authority for the function. Much as the sentiment today is that it was a delegation. In fact, in the 19 years, Public Works have had very little to do and more or less had to accept that the function was handed over, much in the way that my colleague has just spoken about other custodians, water affairs and so on, who today do not account to us. However, from a preeminent custodian position, the department would have oversight into this in regards to interacting with water affairs as a custodian, receiving custodian asset management plans. That is part of the implementation of GIAMA. But insofar as day-to-day activities go, the entire function is managed by Foreign Affairs or International Relations as they are known today. The problem is that the State Land Disposal Act was not amended, which allows only for the Minister of Public Works, and when Public Works and Rural Development and Land Affairs split, a presidential proclamation empowered the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform to dispose in their area and our Minister to dispose in our area. So another custodian, like international relations, does not have the authority to dispose. It would be irregular for them to transact. So they come to us and they say, here's the property, please dispose. And then we would try and assist. Of course, the fact that they don't have the disposal authority can mean that therefore they're not the custodians. If you read the ultimate meaning of custodianship, it's the power to own and buy and sell the property. So there is that debate.
Yeah.
However, at the level of officials, it's one that is very difficult. And I think, you know, leaning on the suggestion of Deputy Minister a little earlier, this could be further work for both departments and even the portfolio committees. I've sat in that portfolio committee in relation to the bill, and it's very clear that the sentiments coming from there is, gosh, why are we doing this? You know, our function is diplomacy. But that's what one is hearing as an official. But as indicated, the function is handed over, and we are working with them on the bill. In relation to the timeframes, we've made our contribution. It's just to say, if the function is yours, please make sure that you do it in terms of GIAMA. That is life cycle, it's asset register, it's user AMPs, it's custodian asset management plan. You follow this, that, and the other, and you comply with the legislation. They come back with suggested wordings, and we say, no, that's going a bit soft. We have to stick to the legislation. So the timeframes are very much set. The bill is in Parliament. It has not been sent back to that department. So I think that department is under pressure, and we've given them our wording. We don't want to back down on our wording because it would be, in a way, conceding on GIAMA, and that isn't appropriate from a preeminent custodian perspective. Whether it's constitutionally compliant or not, I would argue that it is. I don't think that this letter would have been done in a way that is not constitutionally compliant, but can certainly be tested and probed further during the process of the bill, and certainly I will take that back and thank you for that comment. In relation to whom DIRCO report to on this function, clearly the Auditor General is the party that would see whether they account, of course, to Parliament. They don't certainly report to us on the function as we speak at the moment. And that is the reality of the situation as it affects us. That was Honourable Filtana's question that I attempted to respond to there. Honourable Ryder, quite a few questions. What is the state of the assets? Again, we don't have working knowledge of that because it's in the preserve of international relations. The vacant assets are for them to budget, for them to safeguard. The accountability and the responsibility for that is with them. And clearly, the longer these take to be disposed of, the more it's a concern. But that is why they have rather identified, and I think the call comes from other sectors. In other words, the user departments that exist in the mission, it's very expensive overseas, and they, rather than getting into renting, I think they'd rather be utilizing assets where such assets do exist. But again, I'm second guessing as to what they might be doing. So, Honourable Ryder, I'm just quickly looking at your questions. The question as to whether we have a disposal policy, yes, we do, and it was signed by Minister Tulas Mesi on his first foray into the department as minister. If I'm not wrong, it's 2013, and it makes provision for the full range of disposals, which is sale or rental, and it's a very thorough, robust policy. So all our operations are in relation to that, and we're very careful. We have not been, in the main, disposing for private purposes. We're not in business yet at this stage, shall I say, for disposing privately. We support through disposals other departments in their line functions. And exchanges, property exchanges as well, and we receive donations, and we haven't even made very many donations of late. That is what I can report. Honourable Matthijs, certain questions that I think I'd like to answer. Student accommodation, we have a unit at head office. There are a number of people looking exactly at this. It's a little team that are giving effect to this. And indeed, they've come knocking on the asset register's doors, if I may, for the list of vacant properties to see whether those assets can be put to good use. Blocks of buildings which have been vacated by government departments. And the vacancy comes from quite a few reasons. Government departments tend to move. Government departments don't necessarily like the condition and they don't have the money, so that they move out because it's easier to rent. And then the building stands vacant and it's not in great condition, so other departments don't like to come in unless they have the funds to fix it up. And that's part of our work to get these things turned around. It's if a department doesn't have the funds to fix it up, the trading entity or another department with funds can help us, and then we plow it back into the building and bring the building back online. Very much like an old car which is refurbished, if you'd like to think of it in that terms. So there is a plan for that, to rehabilitate these assets, and certainly there is a plan within the student accommodation to look. And I don't have the particulars here, but the team working on them has been given a list of buildings and they are working on it. And I think Mesh seems to have a bit of knowledge judging by the nodding of his head. Honourable Masiela, the uses, I think I've indicated on the foreign affairs, the clarity of the function as well as the uses, to explain that we have limitations in terms of the knowledge. Honourable Adams, ma'am, you've asked some excellent questions, and certainly with relations to the disposals, it's not as simple handing over the counter. They're very rigid processes. We have to value the assets. We've got professional valuers in the department. Their valuations are not merely gone by. They have to report to the Land Affairs Board, which is a board of the minister. The minister appoints very eminent people onto the board, and it's like an oversight body to make sure that the valuations are above board, if you like, and a true reflection of the value. And the Land Affairs Board also gives margins for negotiation above and below. And that process is what we follow. And certainly even in the era of the property management trading entity, department to department, we talk about the affordability. The days of gratis in the context of the PMTE is something that we are grappling with. So we have a robust process with valuations and the Land Affairs Board. The 13 properties abroad, why are they unsold? What are they being used for? As indicated, there's quite a few old houses in Windhoek and Walvis Bay, and apart from that, a few buildings in Europe and parking garages. They're not being used. Our assumption is that Foreign Affairs does maintain them, at least basic level of safeguarding and maintenance. But it's not ideal, and we do need to bring these to some, you know. But as indicated, they've told us that they found other use for it, and unfortunately, we don't to date have knowledge of what those uses are, and therefore we could not really make a meaningful contribution to that question other than in that issue. Honourable Maglopa, again the mandate. I think I've dealt with that question. And the letter is available should honourable members want a copy. Honourable Fick as well, the issue of the disposal is that the legislation was not amended, so they don't have the license, if you like, to sell. Mm. They have to come to us. The tender abroad was only in Namibia. That was the first phase. It was advertised in Namibia, and the potential buyers were mostly Namibians. As far as I know, I wasn't involved in 2010, but this is the feedback I got. And only five could be sold. The other chaps who would have won the tender to buy the other, or in fact did win the tender to buy the other eight, just simply couldn't bring the money. They couldn't afford it when push came to shove, so to speak. So that's why they were not sold. But there's a lot of interest. The department received a lot of interest on all of these properties. I think one of the issues why the properties were not sold is because Foreign Affairs would have had to cede the funds to Treasury, and I know that for many years they've been trying to say to Treasury, look, the money's already out the country, we've got huge expenses overseas on these properties, can we not keep it and redeploy it to other properties overseas? And from what little I know behind the scenes, the discussion is between DIRCO and Foreign Affairs on saying once the money is out, given exchange rate fluctuations and so on, can it not be put to good use abroad? But again, with respect, you know, perhaps further engagement between the two portfolio committees could be...
Just clarity. Okay, sorry. Honourable President Adams?
You know, just for clarity, the representative said that discussions is between DIRCO and Foreign Affairs.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. I tongue-tied Treasury and DIRCO. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Just to conclude the responses to Honourable Pretorius, we can do a breakdown of the 25,012 billion, and then to Honourable Thick, the 139 billion combined deemed cost value for both land and buildings in terms of slides 4 and 5. Chair, just to conclude on some of the areas that may require further explanation, just in information. With respect to the oversight of the public works sector and the concurrent functions, national government departments and provincial government custodians are required to comply with the IAMA. So that will also include DIRCO. But having said that, you also have the emergence of other tendencies in terms of emerging legislation. For example, the Border Management Authority will be a custodian at all land ports of entry going forward. In terms of the current infrastructure, Public Works remains a custodian. In terms of future infrastructure, the Border Management Authority will be a custodian. And the Public Works is involved in trying to ensure that the BMA, or Border Management Authority, complies with GIAMA going forward. So GIAMA, and being a preeminent custodian, is one of our challenges, and other custodians must comply with GIAMA. In fact, the department recently established what they call the custodian forum to ensure uniform implementation of GIAMA, you know, with respect to all custodians. So that's an initiative that we've recently undertaken. Just quickly, Chairperson, with respect to the statements made by several colleagues about surplus assets and economic potential of those assets, and also not selling the family home, I think one of the important things in the department is the development of the PMT financial model to create PMT financial sustainability and also deal and develop a strategy on disposing surplus assets for various purposes while also ensuring that we maintain some of the capital base for the future. I think I hope we've covered, Chair, and we can move on to the second part, which is the operations ring network, with your permission.
Honourable Matthews, I wanted to suggest, because we still have to come back after the presentation of the Operation Bring Back, which are somehow related, and we now a bit pressed for time. I also must give members, whether it's 5 minutes to 10 minutes tea break or comfort break. So where do we stand? What is the allegation to members? Can we have
5 minutes break.
Tea break. Others are saying tea break. Others are saying let's continue. My days, what is your day?
We can continue or have a tea break. I don't have
an opinion. Yeah, because it is healthy to have a tea break. But can I request that we keep time? We say at least 5 minutes. 5 minutes, can we? And there's also some drinks I can see there. Honourable members, is not enough. Can we allow, they say protocol allows honourable members first. Can we do that? Say 5 minutes?
Yes.
Quickly?
Oh, we're all.
Oh,
We are having a study tour.
Okay. Yeah, it's you. It's as name you.
I know all of us.
I know where the problem is, but it's not here.
What is it?
It's with that man,
What my life is, he went there, he came and signed the event. But we are going to have it in what the next thing when it happens.
The chair.
No, it's a wish.
We're talking about the study, the proposed study tour that was now.
Oh, yes, yes.
No.
We have been talking about
it.
Even in our settings, administration, they never go anywhere. Both parliament, state parliament,
I've got a tour outside.
Now what we say, we're going to say we thought that this committee is not going to be. We believe that your members are going as individuals. How does that work now? Anyway, in the cycle of the new financial year, maybe it will work. Maybe.
Yes. I mean, I was worried about the new financial year.
The first thing in the new financial year.
When they say, I didn't really forget that the financial year is next week.
Yes. That's why, remember I said, we need about 15 minutes of study. Remember, this is one of the things, not that it's only about study, this is one of the things we must talk about. Because
we can't even talk now.
Oh, okay.
Can we slowly come back to our seats?
We are going for a show, it's a problem.
Physical verification.
Thank you very much, honorable members, officials. Yeah, the time is beginning to catch up with us, but I think the presentation and questions were very useful and informative. I always get excited when members want to dig the information, but making you to account on previous statements you have made. Is it? So that is a good number. That's your work. So that the officials must know that you listen when they present. Honorable Adams, that was good. You must not think you have forgotten. Must know, Woody, you have a recording mind. So we now want to appoint officials to present on the last presentation, which is Operation. Bring back. Can we hand over? I nearly said you are Matthews as well.
I wouldn't complain. I'm not attached to my salary. Yes, I was just very quick. Schedule 4 of the Constitution is not clear about these concurrent functions between provinces and national. And I don't want public works to start feeling that they can't be responsible or take the responsibility or take the mandate, especially for these core human services that we have, health and education. Okay, vacant buildings and all that and our land is very important, but there's the basic human services that we need to provide our people and it's in our dying state. And I want to impress on the Deputy Minister to go and tell the Minister
There have to be meetings, right, between MEPs and provinces to know what the state. I mean, I understand health is the responsibility right now, and what the health minister this week was trying to see how he can treat the province, health and education, right? I'm talking about the maintenance of these buildings. We must be able to give our people dignity, and it starts from when they walk into the door, when they walk into the gate. So public works can't just say no. It can't be us, because the Constitution is not clear about that. So maybe we need to get an act, we need to have a workshop, we need to see how we can provide dignity for our people. Basic human services, let's start with this. Basic buildings, and those are all important, but let's start with the basic. And
thank you very much. We are in agreement. Please ensure that these institutions, whoever is doing it as a coordinator, just ensure. Please ensure. Maybe the other point I must make, the narrative report on the 4% unutilized properties and land parcels, if it can be sent to our offices, say before the 20th of March, because you said it's available, I think we'll appreciate the policy on disposal as well. I think it will be good that you have it as well. It can be sent to us as well. We hope it does address in the issue of transformation. Those that didn't have any access previously, we hope is talking to that as well. Thank you very much. Can you hand over to Lady Adams?
Thank you very much. Jefferson, I'm a worried man, as I said, because we very much interested in operations, bring back or take back, or OTP or OTP or what they call it. And the time that we're going to spend on it, we're only going to spend 30 minutes on it.
Exactly.
At 2 o'clock.
Mm.
And all of the pictures, he's done with his diet, he needs to go have lunch at 1 o'clock.
The
presentation alone, because there's so much that we need to engage with this presentation, because it is a serious presentation.
Yeah.
That, I really want to explain this to you. Whether we should not do justice to it and reschedule operations,
yes.
Take back for
yes.
Another day or for next week or for whatever.
Yes.
Because why, we did not do justice to this presentation operation take back. We really did not. And it's a thing that we need to get proper information from the department, because we've got answers. We've got questions. And I'm just worried about how we're going to do justice to it, or are we just going to wishy-wash it and put it on the back file 13 or what? That is my worry.
Thank you very much. I'm looking at the honourable members, honourable please, nodding. And there are two ladies that are also nodding. Honourable Marcella and Honourable Patricia Adams, they are nodding to that proposal so that we do justice into it. Honourable please.
Yeah. Okay, so let me just convert the nod into words, Chair. I'm supporting Honourable Adams, and with not because of the content, but obviously because of where he sits to where I sit. But I agree with what I think. I think it's important. It's a very. I read this document,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I got to page 3, and I said to myself, this is serious business. So I think it's important that we really look at this one.
Honourable
Dr.
Madraba.
No, thanks. I agree with the colleague. That's why in the beginning I was insisting that we focus on this, because I saw that it's a lot of things that we need to deal with in this document. But Chair, I agree with the colleagues, and I will also request that the questions that they said they will give to individuals, like I asked about the 4% annual utilization, they said they will provide a plan.
Mm.
of what they're going to do, you know. They said they've got a plan already also to be forwarded so that we know exactly what is happening. So I agree, there will not be enough time to deal with this change because it's important. I perused it last night. I saw that we really need to go. But while they are going back, Chair, I will propose that when they come up with the type of case, resolution cases investigated, they must also indicate timeline. Mm-hmm. When have they handed over? So that when we do our oversight,
yeah,
we see whether there is a progress,
yeah,
or there
progress
is no
report,
more.
Yeah.
That's the question.
Thank you very much, Leather Lemon. I think we are in agreement there,
yeah,
that we don't want to do injustice, Honorable Madoba. We don't want to do injustice. I think that's why you are a doctor. You saw this issue even before, that we should not have separated the two.
Yeah.
Honorable Madoba.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. That's what may I bring with the proposal by my colleagues. I just want to indicate that perhaps when you together with the management committee plan issues that are going to be brought to the committee, perhaps you should exercise your mind as to whether bringing in two issues on the same day, no matter how closely interrelated they may be. I think you've got now, we've been with us since about November or so, yourself, I think you've got an idea of the type of questions that we make, the lengthy comments that we make, you know, where, you know, proceeding with our questions. So it looks like for any presentation, we always need something like 1.5 hours. Now the question is whether this can be, that leaves you with enough time to accommodate another issue. When it's two issues, that one of which is quite light, yes. But otherwise, in order for us to do a thorough job, I think, apply your mind and say, I don't think this committee, I think I know them now, I don't think this committee should be loaded with two issues on the same day. Thank
you. That's a proposal worth looking at, but there will be situation where we can time the presentation. So if there's a need to, for example, now we are deferring this issue, we will look into how best can we, because we must also, we are chasing time as well, so that before we die, we should have done what God wanted us to do. You see? So we don't postpone everything. So we rather time the time. Because many, I was relaxing in terms of timing anybody. I allowed officials to, when Lololo, which I could have cut them. So I don't feel bad about having two issues. If there's a need, we can. So now I can blame myself that I've allowed more time. So which is also good at one point, but we also must understand. So from where we are, I think I must thank everybody, but DM, do you have any points? Okay, so thank you very much, Leonard. I think it was a very informative meeting, good questions from other members, good answers from the officials. Thank you very much. Let's meet then, but we would expect those areas that they must be sent to our offices, so not to individuals. Now we always send to offices. Thank you very much. The meeting is now adjourned.
Oh my gosh.
And your expenditure? You must ask the chairman.
No. I was thinking about that.
Fruitless expenditure.
We go home.
Our flight is 4:15.
Mine too.
I think the members can come back after.
You think so?
I'm concerned that the
example, is 1300.